Welcome. Welcome, ladies, gentlemen, fellow slaves of the global plantation. The Vinnie Eastwood Show is bad news. It's like the news, but worse. It's the lighter side of genocide. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't enjoy it. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? The Vinnie Eastwood Show, where the only thing worse than living in a high-tech global police state run by child-trafficking Satanists is Vinnie's jokes. And today, ladies and gentlemen, we do not have a guest just yet. Mike Martins from Mike in the Night may be calling in. In the meantime, caller lines are open, 512-248-8252. That's 512-248-8252 or 1-800-313-9443. Be looking forward to hearing your calls today. Now, on the articles and things of that nature that I have up, we don't have too many. I was supposed to have another guest on, and that didn't eventuate either. But don't worry. Don't worry. It's going to be a good show, I guarantee you. Now, we have, of course, a little bit of housekeeping to do, ladies and gentlemen. The Vinnie Eastwood Show is proudly sponsored by you, the listener. So if you are so kind as to give us $5 a month or a week or a day, you know, just please go to VinnieEastwood.com, check out our great sponsors, HoldenHealthcare.com and Reopen.nz. You can become a Patreon, donate through the Kiwi Bank or the PayPal. Now just remember, if you have donated, click on the little thing that says click here for your special rewards so you can get my phone number and contact details, and then you can actually have a chat with me. And that's what I really want to do. I want to start chatting with my donors. So please, guys, reach out and show us your faces, mate. All right, so the music, I haven't been doing much on the music front of late. The recording sessions are actually quite expensive, and actually haven't been able to afford to do any for, well, I think the last 4 months since my son's been born, actually. So, yeah, do need a lot of support on that Patreon there for the Vinnie and the Vendettas music as we go in and out of the ad breaks. You'll be able to hear little samples of that coming on through. We've got some great music videos and, in my opinion, the best birthday song that's ever been written. So go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com and click on the Vinnie and the Vendettas tab to check that one out. HoldenHealthcare.com, as I mentioned before, go with a lot of problems, health problems, you know, like when you're working real hard in the truth movement, you there's two types of truthers, really. Those who kind of look at it, they think they're going to get exterminated before their health gets them. And so they don't take care of their health. And those people who realize that, hey, you've got to take care of your health, full stop, otherwise you can't take care of business. I was of the first kind. And now I'm starting to go like, okay, yeah, I really got to do something about this because my spleen started hurting, right? The spleen's like intimately connected with the liver, right? So we go in and it turns out, yeah, you got real bad liver problems, Vinnie. And I go, real bad? What do you mean? And I go, well, we scanned you with the machine. And normally when liver is classified, it's classified as level 1, 2, or 3. 1 meaning very good, 2 meaning it's all right, and 3 meaning very bad. You're a 9, Vinny. Like, oh my goodness, I didn't even drink that much or anything. And it's just like, no, it's carbs, sugar, cigarettes, coffee, any kind of caffeine, you know, or any kind of carb or sugar or whatever. And I was just like, man, that's like all I do, you know, like, and it's all most of us do. And then I found out that one of the side effects to having your liver being poisoned and damaged is actually having apathy, right? I'm not sure if you've ever experienced this, where you're sitting around and you're talking about the problems of the world and how bad things truly are, and you just don't care. You might have a liver problem, like I did, like I still do. And yeah, it's tough to care, really, when you're not in good health. But of course, we are going through the rigmarole and healing up and whatnot, so I'm getting less apathetic as time goes on. Also had like kidney problems, you know, and adrenal fatigue. I was drinking like so much coffee, and the kidney problems and the adrenal fatigue gone, cured them. Just a little bit of a change in diet and routine, and now just have to really focus on the liver. I think it's it's not a 9 anymore. It's like a 4.5 or something, which is still really, really, really bad. Dave's got all these amazing machines, and he brings so much knowledge to the table, because most of the time he just treats hard to treat cases, and so I don't think that's why his service is absolutely invaluable, because it really does give you a full body scan. You know, anything that could possibly be wrong with you, it's detected, and we know how to treat it and get the body to heal itself. And I'm feeling so much better than I was, and haven't had my spleen or liver hurting in quite some time. So it's like, yeah. HoldenHealthcare.com, ladies and gentlemen, emphasis on the care. And additionally, reopen.nz is a directory of anti-mandate pro-choice all-inclusive businesses in New Zealand. Go and add your freedom business to that today. And there's so many different interesting little businesses that have actually signed on and latched onto this thing. And I was talking to somebody the other day, and they were like, "Oh, Vinny, I saw your show and heard about reopen.nz." And I was like, "Hubby, put our business on there," you're like, immediately, kind of thing. So it's good to see that people are putting it up in there. I remember when there were so few businesses on there, but you can just scroll forever. There are so many businesses in New Zealand that have signed up to this website after starting to advertise on the show. And I think that's really good to see. It means that there's a lot of freedom-loving people out there who are doing their business and just still saying, no, I don't think we're going to just deal with this kind of nonsense for too much longer. So reopen.nz is the website if you want to add your freedom business on there. Speaking of freedom, justice for Billy TK and Vinnie Eastwood. If you guys haven't seen this change.org petition, please, guys, like Vinnie and Billy, they were, it's kind of like took himself for the third put. Anyway, we were arrested in August 18th, 2021, the day democracy died. And you can watch the documentary on that on my website. Just look for the blue "The Day Democracy Died" banner, because we didn't know it was a criminal offence to express an unpopular opinion, peacefully gather, or remain silent in custody. And we found out the hard way. So we've been sentenced to 3 months in prison for me. It was initially 4 months, but we got that argued down because of the stack of character references that I had, and the fact that we'd already spent 6 weeks under worse than freaking lockdown, worse than freaking home detention, banned from using the internet. Couldn't even do my banking. Couldn't even pay my cell phone bills or anything like that. Not that I was allowed a cell phone, because I was banned from having one of those too. You know? And the police confiscated my one for 9 months, I think. It was just about long enough to gestate a fetus. That's how long the police kept my phone from me. And they were so slow in getting it back. It was unfreaking believable. And on top of that, there's all these enormous bills we've got to pay. I've still got $6,000 New Zealand dollars. What's that? $4,500 US, I think. And until I've paid off my lawyer, and I'm like struggling right now. I'm like, how am I even going to pay the next week's rent or whatever? And these automatic payments. And if I skimp on the automatic payments, they're going to freaking start charging me interest. And I'm like, oh, freaking heck. You know, it's a terrible situation, guys, and I do need a hell of a lot of support And I would like a lot of people to go to vinnyeastwood.com and donate $6,000 a pop to get rid of that, and then give us something that we can actually help to raise our son on. Potentially, we go into prison still anyway because we're on appeal at the moment. I mean, there were so many things wrong with our arrest, and there were so many things wrong with the alleged law that we were breaking, that we need to appeal it just on general principle, right? Because otherwise, this means when the government just snaps their fingers, you don't have a right to protest, you don't have a right to free speech, and we'll take all your ability to communicate with anybody after the fact as well. So you can't even ask for help, right? I remember on the day that I was able to get my internet back, I went on Facebook and there was this new girl, Chantel Baker, the daughter of, what's his name, Leighton Baker, who's a former New Zealand politician. And she had, in the 6 weeks that I'd been banned from the internet, she'd gained a bigger following than I'd amassed in the 15 years doing this job. Right? Right? So that is kind of like, wow, what am I doing this for? This seems like a really bad idea. Like, there's nobody watching. There's nobody listening. And there's nobody who cares. Like resoundingly, that's what basically seems to be happening. And I'd like to be proven wrong on that, and I may be, and I'd like people to go to that change.org petition and just type in justice for Billy TK and Vinnie Eastwood, or just search Billy TK or Vinnie Eastwood, and sign and share that petition, please, because we want to, when we go to our appeal on the 31st of July, have a significant showing of people and faces and media coverage and all of that kind of thing, because literally everybody's right to protest, everybody's right to free speech, everybody's right to a speedy or just trial in this country simultaneously is being personified by our case. Like, this is extremely important, and internationally it's being taken note of how Billy and I are being treated by the New Zealand justice system. Now, at the moment, I am working on a video. Not sure if I can actually show it to you just yet, because it's not done. But there is a track record of activist persecution in New Zealand. So, for example, Lee Williams, a guy named Cross the Rubicon channel on YouTube there. I still don't know how he's got a YouTube channel. It's freaking unbelievable. Probably because he doesn't talk about the science of, you know. And I can't talk about it either, because I just lose my channel again. Oh my gosh. The censorship is real. It's in real time, bro. It's just horrible. I can't freaking believe it. He spoke out against sort of these, what would you call them? Brown supremacists, I think is the correct term to be using them, because they call anybody who opposes them white supremacists. So that means that they must obviously be brown supremacists. These Māori leaders and trust fund recipients, you know, basically talking about how bad colonization is and blah, blah, blah. And I'm sure colonization was real bad while you're sitting in an insulated house with 24-hour electricity and running water and police and a medical system and a justice system and, you know, all of those kind of things. Surely it can't have been all bad, you know. But anyway, Lee Williams spoke out against them, you know, as anybody's entitled to do in any kind of free country. And you know what happened? His freaking bank accounts got closed. right? People stalked him and closed his freaking bank accounts. And we are now being joined by Mike in the Night. Speaking of activist media persecution and things of that nature, we'll come to Mike in just a second. But when people are talking the truth in this country, they basically get persecuted, like just like that. And it's so obvious that I can just take a bunch of clips from each of their shows and pile them together to just show you in documentary format how obvious that kind of crap actually is, bro. Like, it's real nasty. So, bro, when I talk about this, this is being very, very serious that, hey, New Zealand's totally under attack, bro. And we need help from as many people as we possibly can, internationally or otherwise, to bring light to this plight. Going now, we're going to go to Mike in the Night. Mike, are you there?
I'm right here, brother. How you doing?
I'm good, man. Thank you so much for joining us. Now, Mike, what's your origin story? You know how every kind of like superhero's got some kind of a origin, you know, Batman, freaking Wolverine, whatever. You're kind of both. Now, could you please give us a little bit of a background?
I guess the Wolverine would be because I live in Canada, right?
Yeah.
My origin story is I'm a Portuguese. You were talking about colonialization, and colonialization is a very blanketed term. When they blanket the term across all of Europe, but unfortunately, it's very different when you take the Spanish, who went around the world determining who's boss with guns blazing, the English that brought class, and then the Portuguese that brought free fair trade. And then you had, you know, other cultures that came later on, right? And they blanketed colonization as bad. No, there's a lot of colonial or European expansion that did very well. And a lot of these countries in the West would die of bacteria problems because they wouldn't implement the proper sewering system or the, the whole sanitation that they brought from Europe too, right? So, and I just, the European expansion, I think, was very important to establish the infrastructure that we have today here.
And so your origins, like, were you actually born in Portugal?
Yes, I was. I'm from the Azores.
The Azores. I have no idea what that even means.
It's a bunch of islands 450 miles west of Africa.
Oh,
in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean.
That's remote as, bro.
So, yeah, we have a different view on histories and how the European expansion took hold of the world, right? It was a race. It was a race for the world, so to say, right?
Yeah. I mean, just recently I watched, The Ghost in the Darkness, about how the British were trying to build this railway through Africa.
And they basically needed a bridge to go across.
Yeah. But the whole point of the railway was so they could control Africa and beat the Germans and the French at it.
Right. But here's the problem with the Germans and the French in Africa. They came way later. They came around that time of the movie. The Portuguese were already in Africa in 1440. So that's why when you go to Portuguese-speaking countries in Africa, they actually speak Portuguese, the whole country, not just a little bit of – or the cities or little areas. Everybody speaks Portuguese. That's why today everybody in Brazil speaks Portuguese.
Is that what the P on your hat stands for?
That's for pirate.
It should say for Portuguese. Now, so
no, the P stands for Pittsburgh Pirates.
Okay. Again, outside of my thing. Now, you love your sport, don't you?
I don't really. I like hockey. Hockey's okay. I like watching hockey. My son plays hockey. Hockey is kind of more my sport. They try to make it as fair and balanced as possible. They use replays. They're allowed to, you know, ask for, you know, you got penalties. You have a penalty box to cool off. You're allowed to fight. It's a good sport. It's a very good sport, and you got to be tough as nails to play it.
Yeah, I mean, the excitement that actually happens is kind of like, for Canadians, it's a national pastime, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And that's my thing. My thing is more hockey. Soccer is good because there's so much match fixing. And if you could follow the drama and the controversy or the conspiracy, you could make a lot of money betting. And I've done very well betting on soccer games because I could see the drama. I could see the buildup. I could see the whole story, what they're trying to sell us. And soccer's like that. Soccer at a grand level is all fake. None of it's real. At a big level, when you get to the world levels, none of it's real. It's all staged. And if other teams don't want to follow along, the referee obviously has the whistle and dictates which way the game goes.
For real? It was kind of like when...
Hand to God. I would never lie to you, Vinny.
When it came out that Vince McMahon was rigging all the WCW fights and things like that, and it was all just theater. Now, if in the Roman days, I think gladiators who were surviving, living, you know, they were among the most highly paid people in the entire empire, right? Because of the importance of their job. Keep those frickin' slaves distracted!
That's right. Until the slaves in the stands were asking how much for the meat from the downed gladiator.
Yum, yum.
Yeah, I'm not making this up. It's actually in recorded history that the people in the stands would ask for how much for the meat from the downed gladiator.
So they could eat it.
That's correct. Because Rome was starving from inside out because of Alaric, who was a former Roman centurion, defected from the Roman Empire or the Roman army and went and created his own. He got very bitter with the Roman Empire because he was never promoted to a high level. His name was Alaric, and then he defected, went out to the nomads, made unification with these tribes, and then went back and surrounded Rome and starved the people. And that's how the Roman Empire went into accelerated decline through starvation. Accelerated. It was declining before then. Because they couldn't afford to pay all the barbarians at their borders. So, and they didn't have the army or the manpower to defend those borders. And they were running out of gold and they were losing their military virtue, their land. And it got to a point where then Alaric, they managed to get through and got into the walls. And that's it. They just started slaughtering and murdering people.
Is that an allegory for what's basically happening right now to our world?
Exactly. What happened as Rome started to fall or started to, let's say, devalue itself, it started adding different metals to its gold, and 100 shekels or 100, I can't remember what it was, would buy you two silver pieces, then 100 or 65 silver pieces would buy you a crown gold. Don't take my numbers on this. I'm not sure. But you could always upgrade those. And then it got to a point where the money lenders or the money providers or whatever you want to call them weren't exchanging gold. They were keeping the gold even though they had enough shekels or other coinage to make up that gold. They wouldn't be trading it back because they knew it was worthless. So it got to a point where they started defacing or destroying their own currency. Because they just couldn't afford to exist anymore.
Yep, it sounds like hyperinflation to me.
Mm-hmm.
And now you look at all the food and stuff. I was just thinking about food this morning, you know, not in terms of eating it, but in terms of where it comes from. Like, if I walked into the supermarket down the road and saw a lettuce, and it's just like, where did that lettuce come from? Who grew it? Like, would I be able to find out the farm that it was grown on or how it was grown or talk to the guy who grew it? You know, like how detached are we from our food? And is that a really bad, dangerous situation to be in? Or is that just me?
It's just a one step. It's a one step detachment. And the one step detachment is the logistics. Now, and that is something I've been very vocal about since 2016. That they're going to federalize our transport and logistics. I have this feeling that they're going to make private truck drivers that own their own trucks join the government or be part of more of a federal scheme to transport food. Now, the food, getting to where you're at, is logistics. It's you skip the logistics, you're at the farm, right? Because it's from the farm to the truck, to the truck, to the loading bay, to your counter, right? It's not as complex. If unless you're dealing with really weird exotic imported fruits and stuff that need to come by plane, and it's a lot more difficult. But when you're dealing with just potatoes and onions and all kinds of stuff, it's just a logistic step. Now, if the government could take their hands and stick them into the logistics and federalize, then they could start dictating what stores get what and what stores don't get what. And I'm afraid of that. I'm afraid of the losing the privatization of the logistics and transport.
Just thinking about this as well, because of the overarching sort of nexus point of all of these corporations. They work together, they're owned by the same freaking people, they have the same agenda. And I think that basically they're just running a illegal war on other businesses, more or less. Let's just bankrupt our competition. How do we do that? Well, same methodology that John D. Rockefeller bankrupted his opposition back in the day. He bought out all the barrels and the barrel manufacturers so that nobody else who manufactured oil could get them into a barrel and get it anywhere. And so, therefore, all of their share prices plummeted, and then John D. Rockefeller came in and bought it up for pennies on the dollar, right? And I think that's basically what's happening. Like, I don't know. You might see this as well where you are, and I'm talking to you, Mike, and every one of the listeners. Have you noticed how many empty storefronts there are around lately in the central business places and stuff like that, you know?
Empty storefronts are becoming a problem, and it's been a problem pre-COVID. I mean, we're going 2015, 2016, we're already seeing this phenomena. Now, what we're seeing is I'm talking several thousand acres of empty office space. Thousands of acres of empty office spaces, just complete empty towers. Now, if you go to New York and New York City, so Manhattan, and you take in San Francisco, okay, those two cities have more acreage of office space. Like if you were to add it up into acreage, right? All these offices and all these floors adds up to, I think it was a crazy 23,000 acres of empty space. We read the article, it was a few months back. We went into it, we did a deep dive into the whole thing, and man, it's nuts how much office commercial space is just barren. Empty towers littered across major American cities. And we're seeing it in Toronto, we're seeing it in Sydney, and I think AI is playing a part in it too.
Well, how so?
ChatGPT, you could get it to write up articles, thousands of articles if you need to, that would take off an incredible amount of office spaces. Okay. So what you would need to employ 240 people to do, you could do it by yourself through ChatGPT for like $10. Because that's the electricity it would take.
Whoa.
You could go to ChatGPT and say, "Hey, write me up a summary of white blood cells versus blood," or just make something up. It'll go through. It would do a back search of all the encyclopedia, everything, journals that have been, and it would write you out something of how many words you want or how many pair, and it'll write you out articles. It'll do anything you need. And I'm seeing office space and commercial space taking a hit right now because of AI and artificial intelligence is starting to creep in. And I think the leaders or the world leaders didn't expect this to happen. The leaders or whoever these people who think they run the show didn't expect it to be like this, because now it's exposing a lot of their stuff. And just like the internet when it was launched, they were expecting it to be tamed and protected, so to say, but it just ran loose once private companies like Facebook and all that stuff.
Well, indeed you do. So let's talk about that more after the break. Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Mike Martin's Mike in the Night is my guest. We'll be right back after these messages, folks. No. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about keeping your Luftwaffe aloft. It's the Finny Eastwood Show, and my very special guest is Mike. Mike in the night. Welcome back, brother.
Well, it's great to be here. I got numbers now. I'm just not going to blow numbers out of the air. And this is kind of important because it's coming to a city near you, whether you're in New South Wales, Auckland, or if you are in Los Angeles, New York. These numbers are going to come to bite everywhere. Now, I got the numbers here. New York, San Francisco office buildings are absolute ghost towns. Are you ready for this, folks listening? So picture 26.6 Empire State Buildings, all side by side. That's how much empty space there is in New York City's vacant office space. And ready for the square footage, Vinny?
Go ahead.
74,582,671 square feet of empty office space.
Oh, that's like way too much.
74 million.
Whoa. Oh, man.
So now, okay, let's get into the San Francisco. Los Angeles vacant office space could fill 30.7 U.S. bank towers. And that is 44,046,970 square feet of office space vacant. Now, that's coming all over the Commonwealth. Every major city was going to start to see this bite.
What the hell are they even doing with that space then? Like, why aren't rent prices or anything coming down or to get people in there? It's just like, man, it's just a scam, you know? You're keeping that stuff empty so it'll go to ruin. And then it can just collapse, and then they can go, oh, well, we've got to control demolition it and build something of our own there. It's like, dude, it seems like what the Jehovah's Witnesses were doing in Brooklyn back in the 1980s, actually, buying out whole frickin' neighborhoods, letting them go to waste and in order to drive down the property values of the other places that were there so they can buy them out too.
So I just wanted to throw this out there because I think this is going to come up. This will become a phenomena in London. I think London's feeling this right now. I think other cities around the world, Toronto, is having a problem with vacant office space, and it's spilling or bridging itself into commercial space. And commercial space too, retail commercial is starting to get hit. Strip malls are getting abandoned. You're seeing more and more just empty malls. And that empty mall syndrome started back in early 2012. And he started seeing more and more people get their cameras and go out and film and make these YouTube videos of these empty, abandoned, huge malls. And yeah, and I'm thinking this is just the start. And I think vacancies are going to go up everywhere.
Wonder if there's an opportunity here. I mean, has anybody ever really wanted like their own office block, you know, just like a whole office block just full of truthers freaking doing their thing? You know, that'd be great, wouldn't it? I mean, I wonder if any actual whole buildings are empty, you know. It's just
there's like entire ones empty. There's actually entire ones, Vinny. There is in lower Manhattan. There's and the same thing in L.A. County. There's entire office spaces that are not a single person in them. In the downtowns from Chicago, Los Angeles, the physical layout of the 20th century city is clashing with the new economy. Since the 1920s, single-use zoning has divided our cities into separate neighborhoods for home, play, work, blah, blah, blah. Netflix have made these distinctions irrelevant, but our partitions urban fabric has not yet to catch up. So it's showing here in a graph of it's continuing to climb. Office vacancies continue to climb, and it's just past 20% of its existence. That's huge. If it was 3%, we'd be freaking out, but 20% Q1 of 2023. It's I've never seen anything like it in my life. It's like saying there's four or five completely empty countries in the world where no one lives in them. They're just completely empty. But there's infrastructure, there's building, there's offices, but no one lives there.
Nobody. I mean, how many homeless people we got, or how many people are in like low rent housing or something like that, you know?
Vinny, can I throw something out there? It's going to a little curveball there. Okay. LA County, for every one homeless person, okay, living in LA County in the Los Angeles area, there's four empty apartments owned by foreign investors from China. So for every one homeless person, there's four empty apartments or homes mixed. Guess how many people are homeless in LA County? I can look it up to confirm, but I think it's 28,000.
Whoa. You know, statistics are a real pain for people, aren't they? Because, you know, it's one of those things. You just go like, that's a huge freaking number. How did somebody even discover all of that kind of thing? Did somebody walk around asking all the homeless people, are you homeless? Okay, you're going on the list.
I'm thinking that, yeah. Oh, I'm just trying to see the exact numbers in LA County. What we got.
Because we had some... a lot of footage over there about...
Hold on, there's somebody at my door, Vinny. Give me a second here.
No worries, no worries. Sure. It was somebody like walking around all these tent cities that are in places all across America. Just huge, huge homeless numbers living on the sides of the freaking street out of cardboard boxes and tents and gazebos and things of that nature. And these stats that we're hearing from Mike at the moment, it seems to be, it seems to actually kind of explain a lot. And speaking of Chinese investors, this is, I live in a house that's owned by the Chinese, by the way, and we get flat inspections by their Chinese workers as well. And you know what? It is so much easier having Chinese people inspect your home, bro. They walk in, they take a picture of each room, and then they walk out. Easy peasy. You get white people coming into your house, bro. Yeah, they're going to like get the gloves on and say, oh, there's some dust here in the corner that you didn't get. Oh, there's some stuff on the ceiling that you need to clean up and so on and so forth. And
I was like, okay. I got some bad news. It's actually 69,144 homeless people in LA County.
And that's just LA County, because
69,144.
Because LA County's kind of big, but it's got huge amounts of counties all in its circumference, isn't it?
It's got other little branch cities, you would call them. Like, yeah. So 69,144 as of January 26, 2023.
Yeah. Mm-mm-mm. Who was it? I think there was a filmmaker or somebody who said that I'm not going to do your film unless you hire at least X amount of homeless people to work on the picture. You know,
that was Robin Williams.
Robin Williams, that's right. God rest his soul. And now that Robin's gone, where are all these people going to work?
Yeah. So there it is. There it is right there. So for every one homeless person, there's four empty units owned by foreign investors. You're lucky you have a place that you could rent like that, because a lot of the foreign investors just leave their properties empty. In Seattle, in King County in Seattle, Washington State, there's entire condo towers that are owned by like a single corporation member out of mainland China. And nobody lives in them. They're completely empty. When I used to live in Vancouver, in the city of Vancouver, I used to live across from the stadium where the Vancouver Canucks used to be, in the downtown core by the subway, the whole nine yards. And only 11 people lived in my condo tower. All of them were empty, owned by investors. Some of them still had plastic on them, like plastic on the microwave, on the counters from 14 years ago.
No kidding, bro. Well, on this side here, we also have an article here from the New Zealand Herald.co.nz, August 1st, 2021. It's 17 days before my arrest. Ghost houses increasing. Why are 40,000 homes lying vacant in Auckland? That's 40,000 homes in this city. And this city is very, very expensive to live in. So that's just nuts as well off of there. What have we got? Like 1.4 million, 1.5? In the city, I mean, what's that in the percentage wise? It's just a huge amount, and that's just on record. right? Imagine how much it really is. And yeah, that's the other thing that you got
to. That's what they're allowed to tell you. I think it's probably 8 or 9 times higher.
See, it could be, because ultimately that's what happens here when you hear these statistics. Wow, that statistic is shocking. They only tell you that because the real statistic will give you a freaking myocarditis right now.
So you see, these empty homes create a phenomenon, this bizarre phenomenon where it makes homeowners wealthy on paper, but unfortunately it creates this fake supply and demand issue, and it turns cities into empty shells. Like Paris has seen this problem, Vancouver, Toronto, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle, New York, parts of upstate New York, Chicago, parts like that are seeing this phenomena, and it's destroying their cities, their livelihood. Dublin, Ireland is seeing it too.
Let's say for a moment that if there's a country in the world that's theoretically a first world nation, you know, by first world, I mean, they've got 24 hour electricity, 24 hour running water. All right. That's basically, as far as I'm concerned, that's first world. And if we look at this kind of phenomenon of this emptiness, this empty space out there, I'm kind of thinking to myself, isn't this kind of colonization? All right. Like, think about this. You wanted to destroy your enemy.
Colonization is expansion of infrastructure, right? So when you're colonizing, you're expanding the infrastructure. You're not just going there to hang out. You're actually building the roads to get to locations and cutting the trees to create a – you get what I mean, right?
Yeah.
So buying existing properties and leaving them empty is just destroying the middle class.
Well, precisely. The reason why that is because – if there's no middle class to resist your totalitarian agenda, you can come in and set up shop, right? That's right. What we're talking about when I say colonization. This is neo-colonialism, right?
Okay.
And this way you can, because the place already has people there and you can't just exterminate them, you have to just go in and colonize them economically.
Yes.
Then when they don't want to live there anymore because your economic warfare has worked such a treat on their communities, then you can move in and remove your economic warfare conditions. And then you can set up, not Chinatown, China City.
Yes. And that's becoming a major issue. This is becoming, and this is what I built my channel off back in 2008. On YouTube, until my channel got exterminated in 2012 with no strikes, no debate, no nothing. And all I was doing was exposing empty streets in Vancouver empty city blocks with just houses that haven't had their lawns cut for 5 years, and just houses just dilapidating and falling over, fences falling over onto each other, and nobody taking care, no kids outside playing, no barbecuing, no nothing. It's just an abandoned city. And they basically took down that channel back in 2012, my original YouTube channel. And all I was just showing was how money laundering has destroyed our city of Vancouver. And we're talking. And then when I visited Toronto, I do the same thing in Toronto and different parts of the states. And they took a lot of work and a lot of effort and a lot of. And this is before Rumble, Odyssey, all these other platforms exist, way before, right? So,
very. Yeah, man. I didn't even start getting banned from YouTube. Well, 2008 I started, and when did I start getting banned off of it? I think it was during the 2012 election, I think. I made a video called John Key's Real Past Exposed in 6 Minutes, and that got my channel suspended. Like, it wasn't just they took that video down, they suspended my entire channel for 3 months. And guess how long an election cycle is in New Zealand?
3 months.
Yes.
Can I throw some gas?
No. One more thing. Do you know that the day that I got my channel back, it was the 5th of November, Guy Fawkes Day. when a man blew up wanted to blow up Parliament. That was the day that they gave me my YouTube channel back. I was like, oh, I feel something today. And so I got some whiskey and I sat it on my deck and watched the fireworks and was just like, I got my channel back. But that's never happening again. I'm never getting my channels back, man. Like, I had 65,000 subscribers, 6,000 video. It's gone. And I have to build my audience up from scratch. It's like, man, that's it's freaking brutal when it happens after so many years.
Well, let me throw some fire on that. I'm gonna relate to that. Okay, ready? My second channel. Okay, the trucker rally is going off. The trucker rally in Canada. My channel gets suspended the day of the trucker rally because people were sending us raw footage for Mike in the Night, and sending us footage on the ground, like our field reporters or people that watch the channel said we're gonna go to the trucker rally in Ottawa. You know, the big convoy, right? So my channel got suspended the day they rolled out to Ottawa, and they reinstated my channel after everything disbanded. And 3-4 months later, they reinstated my YouTube channel, my second YouTube channel. So yeah, so all the and then I put it on a YouTube backup channel because I had a backup channel, and all these other channels were taking all our footage that was sent to us, even with watermarks on it. They were erasing the watermarks off it and using it for themselves, and YouTube said that's okay because they're a credible channel. You're not.
I remember when we were reporting on the Christchurch Mosque massacre, I had Ole Damegaard, expert in false flags, come on the show, and we got censored in the middle of a live stream. All right. Yeah. Never happened before. He'd been doing it 40 years. I've been doing it like 13 at that point. Never been censored in the middle of a live stream before. So it means that they already had the algorithms. This was the day after. They already had the algorithms in place, right?
Yeah.
How the hell did they do that unless there was something amiss?
Yeah. There's definitely something going on in the algorithm. There's something definitely, and I think if we're alive long enough, we're going to start to see it really backfire. And I think something's going to happen. I think something's going to happen. And I think what's happening is the truth is trying so hard to surface, and there's nothing they can do to stop it. There's nothing they could do electronically. I think what's going to happen is AI eventually will surface everything that is to be told. And I think in a good way, AI will work for us, and in a bad way, it will work against us by destroying jobs. And obviously, you could write a whole AI now. They're saying you could create a website, like a fake website that you could go to with articles and everything on it, and it will pull stuff off of artificial intelligence all over the internet and actually populate a whole website. And you can even tell it what advertising you want on it and everything. It will actually funnel it within minutes.
I heard a lot of people talking to me about this, and I think it was Jason Kerrison from Op Shop Band here in New Zealand, and he was against the things, which we're not allowed to say on YouTube, and he had to actually start using AI to compensate for not having a band. He was actually able to pop in songs that he wrote, and the AI would transcode it, like these are the chords, these are the lyrics, and so on and so forth. This is the arrangement. And it saved him so freaking much time with creating music. And I think, what was it, American Freedom Radio's Danny Romero, who's talking to a friend of his on a chat one time, and he's like absolutely... bonkers about AI, how he just absolutely loves it, all the things it can do. And he says that there's it's like a child sometimes, and like a naughty child sometimes, which is very interesting, that you can say, no, I don't want that information on this article, I want this information. And the AI will go like, oh, but that's not approved. It's like, yes, it is, because it's backed by facts and stuff. You actually have to teach it like a child in order to think the way you want it to, in order to find the information that you want. And so I thought that was quite interesting. It's like you don't have to have kids anymore in order to train them up and do something or whatever. You could just have a baby AI and teach that.
Yep. But it's a very interesting time we're living in right now, Vinny. And I'm very grateful to be alive to see this. And I think something big is coming down, and something big, and it's going to be in the next couple of months. And I don't, the pendulum has swung back and governments are losing grip with reality. And I don't know what's going to happen from then now, or how are they going to punish us next? Is it going to be, or is it going to be a meteor? They're going to distract everyone. Look, there's a meteor. Look, look, it's coming. It's 24 days out and blah, blah, blah. Or are they going to do first contact with alien civilization? Are they going to do, are they going to revert back to global warming? What are they going to do? Like, they're going to stop climate change for a bit and go back to global warming because it's summer here in the Northern Hemisphere. Like, what are they going to do next? Like, and that's what we're worried about. That's what we're trying to figure out, because they are definitely losing grip right now. And I don't know how they're going to hold on to anything right now, because there's absolutely no confidence in government. And the reason why these bank failures across America is because there's been a runoff on the monetary system where people don't trust their banks anymore and they want cash. They don't want digital currency or CBDCs. They want money.
Man, I was just thinking about this as well. Like last night, bit of bad weather here in New Zealand. And ever since that huge flood that happened a few months ago, every time there's a bit of bad weather, whoop, 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 on your phone, freaking Amber, warning you. You know,
you taking calls, Vincent?
Yes, we are taking calls. Who?
Yeah, check the chat there.
All right, we're checking the chat. We've got a caller, Mike. We've got Andy in Texas. Andy, you are on the air with Mike in the night. Andy, we can hear you, man. Go
can
ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, man.
Oh, hey, great. Thanks. What a great conversation. So first and foremost, I want to say, Finney Eastwood, go ahead, punk. Make my day. That's the beginning, anyway. No. So, I mean, you guys have been talking about a whole barrage of stuff going on here, and everybody has to get their head wrapped around it and whatnot. So my question to you, Vinny, is you've actually interviewed Max Egan, correct?
Numerous times, yeah.
Okay, great. So why don't you tell the people, because I'd like to, this is what I'd like to hear. And your guest is fantastic because he's spot on. He's doing everything he needs. But Max Egan is a guy, if you could get him on this radio show, I'm not asking you to do it. I'm just asking you if you will try to do it. All right, whatever. But absolutely, Max Egan is a good soul. I don't miss any one of his walk and talks. This guy is just, I mean, he tells you like it is, and he's just so layman in everything. You figure it out. Kind of, he points a finger at you like, you figure it out. You know, so, but, I mean, but you do know Max Egan, right?
Oh,
and
yeah.
And how do you feel about Max Egan?
Well, he's kind of like a peer, you know, like a contemporary, because he started his show around about the time that I started mine. And I think Mark Pansio and James Corbett, I think, all started our shows around the same time. We're kind of like, you know, sort of like friends, sort of like colleagues, that kind of thing. We don't talk terribly often and whatnot unless we're doing a show together. But yeah, man, when I was going through it, Max was out there helping me out, and I think he gave me a call when I was in my own personal lockdown hell, and gave me a hand, some words of encouraging advice. And yeah, a lot of people think a lot of different things about pretty much everybody I know on this show, you know. And I think at the end of the day, the only thing I can say is that they don't lie to me, they don't hurt me, and they don't betray me, which I think is the thing, the minimum requirement of what you can call a friend.
Absolutely. And guess what? Most people can't even discern what you just said. They can't figure it out. Here's what a friend is. Dun, dun, dun. We finally discovered what a friend is. But you know what's really sad is that we can't figure out what love is. Most people think it's L-O-V-E. That's it. Love is just that. It's a word. Ah, I feel it for you. No, it is a feeling. Love is not the word that makes you feel love. Love is the trigger mechanism to make your body, you know, start to feel this different feeling.
That's right. It's all about the love, buddy. Mike, thank you so much for joining us, brother. What's your website real quick?
RealMikeMartins.com. You can find us also on Odyssey and Rumble.
RealMikeMartins.com. Thank you so much, brother. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for seeing us. Please donate at VinnyEastwood.com. That's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question. And Eastwood, like, go ahead, make my news. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time.